We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, back to the Gary Parish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN with Jeff Calkins on today's show, presented by the Blue Monkey.
Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner is not your traditional mattress and furniture store. Their prices are always 50% to 80% off retail stores, so they don't have to have sales. They're already killing the competition 52 weeks a year. Got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and when readers of the Commercial Appeal were asked to vote for the best mattress store in the area, the winner four straight years, it's been Sleepy Z's. But they don't just sell mattresses. Don't ever forget that. They also have furniture. It's in the name. Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner. So they have dining room sets, living room sets, rugs, basically anything you need to furnish a home. You could probably find it at Sleepy Z's. And if it's not on the floor for whatever reason, understand there's a 42-inch kiosk there. It's filled with furniture. You can browse through it, find what you want. They'll get it for you. And remember, mention you heard about them on the Gary Parish Show. You're going to save an additional 10% on your purchase. That's at Sleepy Z's Mattresses and Furniture by Michael Zellner. It's located, just want to pop in, 2790 Kirby Whitten and Bartlett. That's at the corner of Summer Avenue next door to Hollywood Feed. The number is 901-692-6200. 901-692-6200. They're on the web, sleepyzzz.com. Jeff Calkins is an award-winning columnist, daily Memphian host of the Jeff Calkins Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11. Joins me every day around this time. He's here right now. Jeff Calkins, how are you?
I'm good, Gary.
So it's another big night for Jeremiah Martin. He gets 30 points. Memphis overcomes a halftime deficit, beats Temple 81-73, moves to 53rd in the net rankings, extends its winning streak heading into this weekend's game at Cincinnati. I know you were courtside. I know you wrote about it. It's like a million Jeremiah Martin columns in the month of February, which if anybody deserves them, it's him. Your thoughts on another just super impressive performance?
Well, I mean, it's gotten to be, and I said this in my column, and I said I don't recall a Memphis player who has been such the focus. And I mean, obviously Derrick Rose was a bigger national focus, right? I mean, he's the best player in America, right? And very clearly, particularly once he got to the tournament, he was the biggest basketball player in America. I mean, he was crushing people on a much bigger stage, national story, et cetera. I just mean in terms of when you go to the game, you went to the game then, yes, to watch D. Rose, and it was moments, like he'd do something incredibly explosive. But the truth of the matter is, you went to see that team. Like, it was Antonio Anderson, and it was Chris Douglas Roberts, who was the All-American, and it was D. Rose, and it was Joey, and they were destroying people and whatever. Now, in a way that I just can't remember, and obviously Dedrick put up big numbers, and certainly in the game against Oklahoma, we wanted to see how he would do in that big, in the national televised games in Oklahoma. But I can't remember going to Tigers games for as long as I've been now, which is 23 years, and sort of just knowing or expecting to see a show by one player carrying the whole deal. This is something that I don't believe I've ever seen. Again, Derrick Rose is a better player. I'm not confused about that. And what he did ultimately on the biggest stage was nationally significant. But I just don't recall going game after game after game and seeing one dude carry a team like this. It has not happened since I have been covering the University of Memphis, this sort of extraordinary outburst. And you keep waiting for it to end. He gets this huge ovation when he was introduced last night, and you just think, okay, well, maybe the Temple, so you can't do it. No, he does it again. Okay, it happens again. And obviously there's always other players who make big plays. Last night was Antoine Jones among them, who made big plays, and that was nice to see. So there's always other players who make big plays. I'm not saying he does it, but those players change. Sometimes it's Kareem Brewton, sometimes it's Antoine Jones, sometimes it's Rennear Thornton. And the constant is a guy averaging 31 points a game for a month, for a whole month. It's extraordinary.
In the month of February, Memphis played 8 games. He scored 245 points. You divide that by 8, what you get is, yeah, you know, 30.6 points per game in the month of February. And it's incredibly efficient as well. 76 of 138 from the field. That's 55.1%. 33 of 66 from 3. That's 50% from beyond the arc. 60 of 75 from the free throw line. That's 80% from the free throw line. So it's not just big numbers that don't look as good when you take a closer look. They're big numbers that look better when you take a closer look because you see that he's doing it in an incredibly efficient way. To your point about not remembering a Tiger player sort of do this type of thing for this extended period of time, I have no memory of that either. And I'll say this, you know, RJ Barrett is going to probably be the second pick in the NBA draft because of his ability to score, just to go put the ball in the basket. He is Duke's best scorer, even if Zion Williamson is Duke's best player. He's averaging 23 points per game this season, and he has had 6 30-point games this season so far. It is one short of the record for Duke freshman 30-point games in a season that was actually set by Marvin Bagley last season. And, you know, if he just continues to perform at the rate that he's performing, he will soon tie that record and then eventually break it. So he's got 6 30-point games this season. Jeremiah Martin's got 5 this month. I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, you could reasonably argue that nobody is playing better in the month of February than the young man who was ranked 397th in the class of 2015 and was the least heralded player in a 8-player recruiting class that Josh Pastner committed. You know, and an 8-game stretch is not insignificant. I mean, Memphis has only played 29 games this season. I mean, so, you know, this is a big chunk of the season where he has been not just really, really good, but nearly as excellent, if not as excellent, as anybody else in the country.
Well, yeah, and then obviously there's lots of variables. Duke has tougher competition. On the other hand,
Duke also has other players around him. Like, I mean,
players who are around him. There's lots of variables here all over the place. So I'm not, but I mean, the other thing, as you point out, he did this last night. He took 16 shots. I mean, it's like he's totally, and it really is striking. I know it's easy to say I'm just about the wins, but like he's so clearly just about the wins. I don't think he looks back at that UConn game, which is the one game in this streak where he scored only 12 points. It was actually Keevan had a big game in that game, his last big game for Keevan. I don't think he looks back at that UConn game as, oh, damn, you know, if only I'd scored 30 at a UConn game, I'd be averaging 35. I really don't think it matters to him. I asked Penny. Because I assume that when Penny was playing, that it was the same. I mean, it was different. Penny was more electric. Penny was more exciting. Penny was, again, one of the greatest players in what turns out, you know, in NBA history. So a different skill set. But I imagine when you went to watch the Tigers during those years, it was, let's see what Penny will do, right? And that's the feeling I have now. Again, it's not as flashy as Penny, but it's, let's see what he's going to do. Let's see what Jeremiah is going to do. I don't really remember having that feeling. I remember thinking Dedrick was really skilled, but I didn't remember going saying, man, wonder if Dedrick's going to go off and get 41 tonight. You know, that's not how I approached the game. It's not, he was interested to see if they were going to win or whatever else and how they do. And I knew he was skilled and really good and underrated and underappreciated, really. But I didn't, it wasn't the show that this has become, and this has really become just remarkable. And then you hear other coaches talk about it, and they just have such incredible regard for him. I mean, who else, if you're a coach, who else are you game planning against? You know, we were talking about it, like, go box and one, like, who's going to hurt you on this team? There are players who are capable of hurting you, obviously, but it's remarkable how much it all has to flow through Jeremiah.
Well, I told this story before, and I retold it in the opening segment. You know, last year I did maybe 4 or 5 Memphis games, sideline reporting for CBS Sports Network. I actually didn't do any this season because I think I've been in studio for most of Memphis' game on CBS Sports Network, or I haven't been home when those are happening, and they didn't use sideline reporters on the Memphis games this season, I don't think. So I didn't do any this season, but last season I did four or five. And, you know, before you do that, the routine is that you go to shoot-arounds day of. And so it becomes a long day because you're, like, at a 9 a.m. shoot-around and then at an 11:30 shoot-around, and then you can bounce back to a hotel for 2 hours, and then you're back at the arena, you know, 2 hours before tip-off. But I would go to these shoot-arounds for both the Memphis team and whoever its opponent was. And it didn't matter whether Memphis was playing South Florida or Tulsa or whoever. You know, one of the things that the color and Pete Gillen, especially, one of the things he will ask every time is, like, who concerns you most on the other team? Like, what is the key to slowing down, you know, your opponent tonight? So he would ask it to, you know, the coaches of the teams getting ready to play Memphis. And without exception, every answer that I was there to witness was, oh, Jeremiah Martin. And that was last year before he was even doing this stuff. He was everybody's focus going into the games. It was like nothing else is really a problem, but that kid can be a problem. We have to make him uncomfortable. We have to get the ball out of his hands. And I can't imagine that focus has changed at all this season. My point being, if coaches were talking about him that way privately last season, what do you think they're saying right now? Because last season's Jeremiah Martin was really good, but nothing close to what he's doing right now.
Right. No, it's got to be like, we just have to stop. And they can't.
They
clearly can't. We've seen it. Fran Dunphy's a smart guy, and he couldn't, like, they couldn't do it. And so it's just remarkable to watch. And I assume that, like, now, of course, now it sets up this huge game against Cincinnati, against the other possible player of the year, the general consensus player of the year, in the conference, but also, and I texted you about this last night because I think people are curious, okay, what happens if they actually beat Cincinnati? You the other day were talking about if they do what they're supposed to do, whatever, they'll be in this position where they have to win. What happens if they actually beat Cincinnati? That'll be their first quadrant run win, but will that be enough if they then don't win the title? Is there any conceivable way, and that's enough to get them to the tournament? In other words, and I think that sort of frames how big this game could be, because if this game could do that, or maybe just allow us to talk about it, maybe that's all it would be. It becomes a colossally important game against Cincinnati.
I still think, because I looked at it last night and broke it down and said, okay, if they beat Cincinnati on the road, that's a quadrant one. If they got to the championship game of the AAC tournament, they would almost certainly have to, you know, beat somebody else that would qualify as a quadrant one, because you've got to remember, for the purposes of that system, even though these games will be inside FedEx Forum and they won't feel anything like neutral court games, they will be neutral court games. And so home games, quadrant one wins are only against teams that are ranked 1-30. But if you're on a neutral court, it's 1-50. And so a win in the AAC tournament over Houston would qualify as a quadrant one. A win over UCF in the tournament would qualify as a quadrant one. And a win over Cincinnati in the tournament, or a win over Cincinnati in the tournament, would qualify as a quadrant one. So if they could get the Cincinnati game, that's one. And then they could maybe get another one. They'd almost have to get another one to get to the championship game. That's two.
No, they'd be two, but even then they'd be 2-8 quadrant one game.
It's still hard. It's still hard to get there. But here's what I said, dating back to the beginning of the season. I said, all I would want, and it's not all I would want, but like I think you chalk things up to as successful if we're entering March and we can have conversations about the bubble and about at-large possibilities, even if they're further removed from the bubble than they realistically need to be to feel like they can be confident if we go do A, B, and C, we'll get there. But can you have conversations heading into March? And we are heading into March, and we're having that conversation right now. And so I think almost regardless of how this thing closes, in fact, I would argue regardless of how this thing closes, year one is going to go down as successful under Penny Hardaway. To me, what's most interesting is not trying to figure out what they could do over the next few weeks to get in the at-large conversation. It's actually looking at how close they could be if you just do a couple things. Flip the Charleston game that was a coin flip situation in the final minutes. You know, complete the comeback against USF, or don't go down 29-1 or whatever it was against USF.
They were up, you know.
Yeah. You go flip the Texas Tech result. You're winning that game in the second half.
Yeah.
Flip the Cincinnati game. You're up double digits, like 14, 15 minutes to go. Like, if you flip any two of those and take them from losses to wins, I mean, we're talking about 20. I mean, you could reasonably, very reasonably, come up with a place where Memphis is like 21-8 overall right now, 12-4 in the AAC, and I think in, you know, Jerry Palm's bracket, in Joe Lunardi's bracket. And it really does go to show you that even though people don't think about this in real time, and I think sometimes players don't recognize this in real time, it really is remarkable how just a handful of possessions, not games, possessions within games can change your entire season. You take, if I went back through Synergy and went through those games right there, and you said, Gary, you can change 8 possessions, I bet you I could get it to a point where then I could present you with a resume, and you'd say, that's Memphis's resume? And I'd say, yeah. And you'd say, yeah, that looks like an NCAA tournament resume. I mean, just like 8 possessions. It wouldn't take much.
It wouldn't take much. It's why I think Penny, to his credit, was so frustrated. I mean, all he talked about at the beginning was, we got to win some of these games because we're going to get in the NCAA, because we want to get in the NCAA tournament. And at the time, people are kind of rolling their eyes, saying, what do you mean? No one thinks you're going to get in the NCAA tournament. And yet, it appears that that might well have been such. He was right about that. To me, what's interesting about this whole thing is, obviously we know from an attendance perspective and from a attendance perspective and from a recruiting perspective, it's everything you could want, right? I mean, when he was hired, it was, are they going to get Tyler Harris, or are they going to get Alex Lomax? And then it was, are they going to get DJ Jeffries? And then it was, are they going to get Malcolm Dandridge? And then it was going to be, are they going to get James Wiseman? And like, every one of those is yes. And it was going to be, okay, are the fans going to come back? And we knew that one. And that's been a complete yes, right? The other thing that's just very clear, regardless of where being better gets them, I don't know where better being better is going to get them. I don't know if they're going to win this tournament or not. They're very clearly better. So you just have to be reassured about the coaching job that has been done here. Like, if you would say this is what have we seen? We've seen a team that looked like it looked against Oklahoma State, and then we've seen a team that looked like it looked just against Wichita State and against Temple. And what you see there is real progress. And so, I think you've gotten pretty much everything you want out of this season.
You know, when, if we stop talking about Memphis and stop talking about Penny, but I told you that there's a basketball coach who inherited a program that finished 161st at KenPom last season, and then, you know, got the best recruiting class he could get, you know, in a matter of weeks and enrolled it, but it didn't have a single consensus top 100 prospect in it. And so at KenPom, it was ranked 107th in the preseason, and now it's up to 71st at KenPom and 53rd in the net, and, you know, with a chance to finish top 4 in the AAC, and alone in 5th right now, you would say, oh man, that person did a hell of a coaching job. And then I'd say, yeah, and that's the same person who people were calling the, quote, high school coach 4 months ago. Like, you know, like nobody doubted whether he would be able to whip the fan base into a frenzy and get that building looking the way it's supposed to look, or that he'd be able to recruit effectively and quickly. The questions were about whether the, quote, high school coach could do the job on game day against, well, let's just focus on the last two, people like Greg Marshall and Fran Dunphy. And I think he's proven, undeniably, he can do the job on game day.
Well, and I think to some extent it also just goes to the Kevin Davenport stuff, is that whatever you think of the way he talks about his players or the way he talks, period, it's clearly working. You know, I mean, it's not necessarily I don't know what's working with Kevin Davenport particularly. He's been sort of frustrating. He's a player who's been a little bit of a frustrating player. But even you saw last night with Antoine Jones, like, there's a guy who's, he loses him and pulls him back and loses him and pulls him back and loses him and pulls him back. And yet in a really big game, they're down 5. He starts him in the second half and he comes out and hits a huge jumper. And he was a big part of that game last night. And, say what you want about whatever you think Penny's too tough, whatever it is. it seems to, I just think it seems to be working. So I don't know how you can quibble with it.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about, because we discussed the Kevin Davenport, the Penny Hardaway quotes about Kevin Davenport yesterday. And, you know, when they first, you know, when they first went public via Dave Woloshin and Peter Edmonston show, people were debating, oh, well, what's Penny trying to do here? You know, is he trying to motivate Kevin Davenport, or is he trying to bury Kevin Davenport? Some people even thought, is he trying to get him to transfer, even though, like, transferring's not on the table for a senior? And one of the things I said, and you said it as well, is he's not trying to do any of those things. He just was asked a question, and he just does what he does, which is tell you what he thinks. And last night, and the other thing I said was, and it would, you know, I'm not bothered by it, because I'm unbothered by coaches who tell the truth, as long as it's, like, not mean-spirited. And way over the top, and there was nothing mean-spirited over the top about what Penny said. But also, as long as it comes from a coach who, you know, who cuts it both ways. And we had seen as recently as this past weekend, Penny Hardaway is praising Jeremiah Martin, saying he's putting together the best 7-game stretch, which is now 8-game stretch in the history of University of Memphis basketball. And I thought Penny last night touched on both of these things. You know, I'm not assuming he was listening to us talk, but, like, he repeated pretty much what we said, which is A, yo, man, I'm not trying to motivate anybody or bury anybody or embarrass anybody. I would never try to embarrass a kid. I'm just, like, I'm keeping it real. I'm telling you the truth. And keep in mind, and I thought this was a very important point for him to make, in November, December, I called the same player unstoppable. You know, I was telling you he's our best player and nobody can stop it. And because it was true then. And I said what I said yesterday or earlier in the day, because that's what's true now. And it's unfortunate that you can't just keep it real every day, but we live in a world where you can't keep it real every day. And I thought he did a pretty fine job explaining himself. Like you said on your show this morning, you can agree or disagree with what Penny Hardaway says, but I don't think you can ever think he's trying to do anything other than just tell you what he thinks in that moment. You can project and try to twist it into, well, you know, determine what his motivations are, but the motivations really aren't there other than just to answer the question that was asked just seconds ago.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I thought we talked to both of them last night, and I do think, well, truth is, I think Kevin didn't like it. I don't.
Well, nobody would like to hear that about themselves, right?
No, I mean, no one would like to hear about himself, I don't know that he disagreed with it. Here's the other thing: it's clearly nothing that Penny hasn't said to him a million times, and so he knows that's and something honestly that Tubby probably said to him too before that. Like that's the knock against him, and yes, nobody wants to hear it, but I don't think, I'll be honest, I don't think he was appreciably better last night or appreciably worse last night because of those comments. And I think Penny's record of getting through to players, I mean, heck, he's got both Tyler and Alo coming off the bench. Who would have imagined that he could have done that, pulled that off, right? But he did. And I'm not saying they're delighted either, but they, the way he's doing it is working. It's just working. And so, yeah, and so Kevin, I don't think Kevin was particularly happy. And then I asked Penny, because I knew exactly what he was going to say, which is, I just tell you what I'm thinking. Like it is so bizarre. We talked about this literally yesterday, that people are so used to coaches not telling you the truth, and then they grump about it, that when a coach does tell you the truth, it strikes people as just shocking. There was nothing shocking at all about what he said yesterday about Kevin Davenport. What he said was, in fact, I think probably what every Memphis fan already knew about Kevin Davenport. Like, he literally said nothing shocking whatsoever. The only thing shocking about it is that most coaches lie. And whatever, they just don't say it. And Penny says it. I guess if it would be one thing if he were losing the team because he were saying it, they'd say, well, maybe it's unwise. But that's not clearly not the case. They're getting better because of the way he's coaching them. So to me, I actually thought both Kevin and Penny did a very good job of handling those questions that I put to them.
That is Jeff Calkins. If you haven't read his column yet on Jeremiah Martin from last night's win over Temple, you can find that at dailymemphian.com. He'll be back in studio tomorrow morning. Thank you, sir.
See you, man.
Bye-bye. When we get back, so I was in studio last night, CBS Sports Network here in New York, and we always have a host and three analysts there. It's either some combination of me and Seth Davis and John Rothstein and former basketball player, or me, Seth Davis, John Rothstein, and a couple of former basketball players. Last night it was me and a couple of former basketball players, one of whom was Richard Jefferson, who I had never worked with before. Funny story, somewhat funny story. I don't want to oversell it, but kind of funny story. I'll tell you that next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned that Tennessee-Ole Miss game down at the Pavilion. It's going to be on SEC Network. It starts at 6 p.m. Central. If you're going to watch it on your couch, maybe you're going to have a drink if you want to have a drink. Can I recommend New Amsterdam Vodka? It's a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains. 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness. Filtered 3 times to create a soft finish. How smooth is it, Mr. Big Chest?
It's so smooth you can drink it straight.
It's so smooth you can drink it straight. And yes, it really is what I buy when I'm inside the liquor store. And that's because it's an awesome vodka that's reasonably priced. It's among the reasons it's the fastest growing brand of vodka in the United States of America. We've turned Memphis into the number one market per capita in the country for New Amsterdam Vodka. I'm very proud of that. And so keep supporting the brand. If you like flavored vodkas, they got that too. Grapefruit, apple, peach, orange, mango, pineapple, red berry, coconut, lemon, and raspberry. Try one, try them all, mix them together. Just make sure next time you're in a restaurant or a bar or a liquor store, you ask for it by name. New Amsterdam Vodka, pour your soul out on the web, newamsterdamspirits.com. So last night I was in studio here in New York inside college basketball, CBS Sports Network. And one of the neat things about the job is I end up working with some former NBA players, like guys I've watched as I've been a college sure. basketball analyst. One of them is Brendan Haywood, who's become a friend of mine. And last night I worked with Richard Jefferson for the first time. Richard Jefferson, of course, former Arizona star, played with LeBron in Cleveland, was on that championship team in Cleveland. He is now retired and he's getting into media. And he was with us in studio last night. I'd never met him before last night. But the last thing I remember reading about Richard Jefferson, because it was on like some of these, the blogs that cover such stuff, yeah. is that he was dating Tommy Lauren.
Oh.
The Fox News
correspondent,
yeah,
like
right?
the right-wing kind of crazy person, isn't she? I mean, she's a right-wing.
I mean, right? that's like, my, pretty, that would be my opinion, she's kind of a crazy person, but somebody else
sorry,
might have
I
another
didn't mean
opinion
to label her. Whatever.
So I'm like, so that's
right-wing
the last
political.
Thing.
She's right-wing political.
The last thing I remember thinking about Tommy Richard Jefferson was like, oh wow, he's dating Tommy Lauren. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know Richard's background in terms of politics or social issues or whatever. But I was like, well, that's sort of interesting. So I meet Richard Jefferson, and like, it's all I can think about. I want to talk to him about this. I want to say, okay, is she really the person that I see on Facebook
right.
or like what's she like when the camera's off?
I
got all these questions, and then I'm like, listen. I don't know Richard Jefferson. It ain't my place to be. It might be inappropriate for me to, like, within 5 minutes of meeting
sure.
him, ask him about his girlfriend, even though, because I'm just sort of interested in, like, that dynamic. Like, how did that happen? How's it going? What's she like? I don't know. Got all these questions. So at some point, like, our makeup room is not near our studio, and it's kind of, like, the broadcast center is an entire New York City block. It's a maze in there. Like, you could get lost for days. So he's never going to be able to find it on his own. And I say, listen, I'll walk you up, and, we'll just... you can go first and then I'll go after you and whatever. So we're walking up together and just like two people, like you got things to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. You don't just walk up and sign.
No.
So all I want to do is ask him about Tommy Lauren.
Right.
But I can't ask him about Tommy Lauren. I can't bring myself to do it. So we just talk about, honestly, LeBron and the Lakers and that whole circus because
right.
he's tight with LeBron. I mean, he won a championship with LeBron and he lives in LA now.
Right.
So I never bring it up. Then we get out on set. And we're getting ready to go on, and we're just sort of small talking because there's a couple minutes left before halftime. And Brendan and Richard know each other, obviously, but they never played together, so they're not friends.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, Brendan goes, "So, Richard, where you live down?" He says, "I'm out in L.A. I live in L.A., but I bought a place here in New York too. So, I'm back and forth. I got a home there. I got a home here. But, that's the this
yeah.
is me talking, not Richard, but like when you made $110 million in your basketball career. You can afford a place in L.A. and afford a place in New York. So then Brendan goes, you married? You got any kids? And Richard goes, yeah, I'm married. I got two kids. Hmm. And I'm like, well, this is interesting.
Right.
Because, like, I've been trying to ask him about dating Tommy Lauren. Mm-hmm. He's married with two kids.
Yeah.
I'm like, what in the world is going on? Mm-hmm. I was like, maybe he had an affair with Tommy Lauren,
right,
which,
yeah.
like, you know, it ain't my
whatever,
place.
No judge.
You know, who am I to say? Whatever. And but now I'm just confused and even more intrigued, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we do that halftime, and I'm talking about, you know, Dayton basketball or whatever we're doing,
right.
Duke and Virginia Tech. But the whole time I'm thinking about this Tommy Lauren thing, I'm like, I got to get to the bottom of this. Because the report was like in January, Richard
right.
Jefferson dating Tommy Lauren. And now it's like Richard Jefferson says he's been married for 5 years. He's got kids 4 and 2. I don't know how this works exactly. So we get back into what we call the bullpen where we all sit around.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're usually in there watching games and talking and whatever. And I'm like, huddled over, like I'm over my computer,
yeah.
and I'm like Googling this. I'm like, I gotta figure out what's going on. So I find it immediately. Here's the headline: Richard Jefferson dating conservative Tommy Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
Another headline: NBA's Richard Jefferson dating conservative bimbo Tommy Lauren. Right. So
yeah,
there's all sorts of versions
yeah.
of this. So I'm looking for, and then you know what I find out?
What?
It was a fake story.
What?
There was a picture of him, Richard Jefferson, walking in an arena.
She looks like her.
With Sarah Kustak, who also works on Nets broadcast with him, and she looks like Tommy Lauren.
I'm looking at the picture now.
And so people, like these real gossip websites picked up on Richard Jefferson is dating
Dude,
Tommy
the
Lauren.
The internet is fake news, man.
And it wasn't even Tommy Lauren. He's actually married.
Yep.
And even the woman that he's with is not somebody he's dating. It's merely somebody he works with inside of a basketball
Unbelievable.
Arena.
Unbelievable.
And so now I'm like, holy crap, this must have been like incredible. Like you wake up one day and the whole internet's got you dating Tommy Lauren. So now I'm like freed up to ask him about it, right?
Yeah.
So finally I'm like, yo, you got to tell me what it was like on the morning all the gossip sites had mm-hmm. you dating Tommy Lauren. He's like, dude. He's like, I woke up and I've got friends calling me, text messaging me, like, yo, what are you doing?
Right.
And he's like, dude, I don't even know Tommy Lauren. I don't even never met
right.
her. What are you talking about? And he finally gets to the bottom of it. He's like, I'm not on Twitter. Like, Richard Jefferson's not on Twitter.
Good for him.
He's like, so I didn't see it immediately the way everybody else saw it immediately. He's like, but it's still out there. People still think I'm dating Tommy Lauren.
Ridiculous.
I said, dude, I said 5 minutes ago I thought you were still dating Tommy Lauren. When you said you were married with two kids, I could not have been more confused. And so I got to the bottom of it. Not only is he
so
not
funny.
Dating Tommy Lauren, he's never met Tommy Lauren. And he did go on record saying he would not date Tommy Lauren. He doesn't know if they'd be able to get along, even though she is undeniably attractive.
Yeah.
We'll be back with dinner to come. So Jeremy and his wife, they had a home, but they wanted to sell it and get a different home to move into a different school district because they were looking out for their children. So they listed their home with Josh Hysaw, and in a matter of days, it was sold. They're done with it. It sold at its full asking price. Now, how did Josh do that? He did it with his 45-day guarantee. It's a system for selling homes that creates more demand and gets homes sold faster and for more money than the average agent. The first step is Josh helping you price your home in a way that makes it attractive to buyers. You guys agree on a price, then Josh goes to work. And if your home isn't sold in 45 days, listen, 45 days at that agreed upon price, Josh will step in and make the mortgage payments until it sells, or he'll simply buy the home from you. You pick, totally up to you, and it's a risk-free proposition. Working with Josh, it does not obligate you to anything. If he isn't doing his job, in your opinion, even if your opinion makes no sense, you can fire him, no questions asked. You can even do it by text message. Understand, Josh has flexible fees. There are no upfront costs. So if you're trying to sell a home, call the only real estate agent I'd call if I wanted to sell my home. It's Josh Hysaw, 461-8147. On the web, joshsellsthemidsouth.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Off top, get guap, the hood got heavy metal like Slipknot.
Cooper Systems over in the Mount Moriah Office Park. On the web, coopersystems.com. That phone number is 360-9679, 360-9679. Call Lee and Lauren Cooper if you need a computer. High-end, low-end, middle-of-the-road, desktop, notebook, tablet, PC, or even a MacBook Air. You can get a MacBook Air for like $599 at Cooper Systems. Whatever you need, they've either got it for you, they can get it for you, they can build it for you. And that's important to understand, because if you go to the big box stores, you're just going to buy what they have. And if you're a normal internet user, like somebody who just messes around on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, surfs the web, you're going to end up paying way more for a computer than you should, because you're going to be paying for a bunch of stuff you're never going to use. If you're making music videos, you know, for Block Boy or something, then yeah, you probably do need a several thousand dollar computer. But if you're just, again, watching YouTube videos, messing around on Facebook, you don't need to spend that kind of money. You won't spend that kind of money at Cooper Systems. So call Lee and Lauren Cooper. Tell them what it is you're going to be doing on the computer. Then they can find a computer that's perfectly suited for you. It's going to be better price for you. That's at Cooper Systems, Mount Moriah Office Park, on the web, coopersystems.com. Let's do Dinner to Go.
Dinner to Go is presented by Humphrey's Prime Cut Shop, a Folks Folly original.
It's Dinner to Go. What did we learn today?
A whole bunch of stuff, but we mostly focused on Jeremiah Martin, averaging 30.6 points per game in the month of February, shooting above 50% from the field, above 50% from the three-point line, 80% from the free throw line. He has been tremendous for a significant portion of this season now, and we'll get to see if he keeps it going Saturday night up at Cincinnati.
What's the biggest game tonight?
Bulls Grizzlies, FedEx Forum, downtown Memphis. Bulls are 16-45 overall, 9-21 on the road. Grizz 24-38 overall, 15-16 at home. Bulls are 13th in the East. Grizz are 14th in the West, so neither team is making the playoffs. This really can't be the biggest game of tonight. I don't know why I said it is. I apologize. Grizzlies are 3.5-point favorites either way. Total's 216. Tip schedule for 7.
Gamble
you can
on
listen.
It.
You can listen right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
What should I watch on TV?
Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, featuring an interview with Chris Pauls on HBO at 6:30. A new episode of A&E's documentary, The Trump Dynasty, is on tonight at 8 o'clock. This episode 3, it focuses on how Donald Trump became a TV celebrity. Again, that's 8 o'clock on A&E. The World's Best is on CBS at 9 o'clock. That's America's Most Watched Network, Network of Stars. And if you're up late, Adam Carolla's on Jimmy Kimmel, Gary Clark Jr. on Jimmy Fallon, John Oliver's on Stephen Colbert, Tyler Perry is on Seth Meyers, Claire Foy going to be on James Corden.
Is there anything I need to make sure I read?
Maybe Michael Cohen's opening statement that published late last night, but that he made earlier today. We didn't get into it on the show because I had a lot of other stuff I wanted to talk about, but it was a pretty fascinating day, and it's an incredible read, whether you take it at face value or not. So Google that and dive in.
What's on tap for tomorrow?
Well, it'll be Thursday. We'll look back at Bulls Grizz, maybe. Start looking ahead to a busy weekend of college basketball. John Martin going to join me in the first hour. Jeff Calkins in the second. Should be fun. Enjoy your night. I'm going to enjoy mine. Meet me back here tomorrow at 4 till then. Be careful, be kind, be good. Rep your hood.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.